With the death of the hated emperor Domitian, we now enter an age that some historians call the High Roman Empire, the pinnacle of the pinnacle. Just shy of a century, from AD 96 to AD 180, Rome was ruled by a succession of five emperors. And while each of these emperors had their flaws, some of them more obvious than others, they're typically regarded among the very best leaders that Rome had ever offered. Edward Gibbon, who wrote the very famous History of the Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, which was published in 1776, would call this span of time that we're about to begin talking about today, quote, the period in the history of the world where the condition of the human race was most happy and prosperous. These are lofty words, but are they true? Were these years the best years in Roman history, let alone the history of the whole human race? Well, as we'll see today, it didn't quite start out that way. Episode 28, A New Start. Folks, my book, Pox Romana, P-O-X Romana, The Plague That Shook the Roman World, is about to drop. So I encourage you, if you haven't yet, find it on Amazon or Princeton University Press's website. There's an audiobook, a Kindle edition. I'm also appearing on several podcasts coming up, including the Not Old Better Show. Some folks may listen to that. It's a pretty popular podcast and radio show on public radio. I'll also be appearing on The Daily Stoic with best-selling author Ryan Holiday. That should be a fun episode. And my talk at the Smithsonian will be online on Tuesday, January 30th. So a lot of things coming up. Keep an eye on this space for more. For now, let's get to the program. It was the year AD 96. And the last member of the imperial dynasty founded by Vespasian just 27 years earlier was dead. And as we talked about in the last episode, this guy, Domitian, may very well have been the worst Roman emperor up until that point in time. But his death did not bring instant and obvious unity to the Roman Empire. Big surprise. None of the assassinations that we've seen thus far really brought lasting stability. Most members of the Senate hated Domitian, and they showed it by condemning the dead emperor's memory on the very day that he died. They systematically removed Domitian's name and image from monuments and inscriptions, but by all indications, Domitian was nevertheless wildly popular with the broader citizenry and certainly with many soldiers whom he paid very well. The Senate pressed forward anyway, so without consulting the soldiers or the Praetorian Guard, we know that they tend to want a say in who is going to be the next emperor. Well, the Senate didn't consult them either. Instead, they just appointed one of their own, an elderly senator, to become the next emperor. This man was the 66-year-old former consul, twice consul, in fact, named Nerva. And the appointment of Nerva was a truly special moment for Rome's nobility because finally, after so many emperors had won their office through conquests or coups or adoption, here was the Senate finally reasserting itself as more than just a ceremonial body, more than just a vestigial republican organ. With the appointment of Nerva, who had served twice as consul, they were getting both a Senate-friendly emperor and the Senate were also rebalancing political power back in their favor. And on his appointment, Nerva took an oath promising to never execute a senator without a trial. So things are looking pretty good for the Roman Senate. But in reality, it wasn't all sunshine and rainbows. Nerva had an uphill battle in front of him if he wished to win over all of the people that were not in the Senate. His approach was to essentially be a nice guy and offer a general amnesty, wasn't really much different than what happened after Julius Caesar was killed, which we talked about in episode 2 of this podcast. The amnesty went like this. First, Domitian's murderers were not going to be prosecuted. And second, Domitian's friends and allies were not going to be executed or exiled either. So nobody was going to be killed. No one was going to be exiled. Besides, Domitian had made many appointments over the almost 2 decades that he was in charge. He appointed governors and military officers, and Nerva, with such a fragile position, could not afford really to lose any key and experienced leaders. So there were not going to be purges or exiles or reshuffling of the government. But at the same time, it's not as though everyone just agreed to put aside their differences. Rome under Nerva was drenched in tension and potential for conflict. It was just seething under the surface. Domitian's allies wanted justice. An emperor was assassinated and nobody was doing anything about it. The people that hated Domitian, many of those in the Senate, they not only wanted Domitian's memory condemned, they wanted anybody that was associated with the former emperor out of power and out of political life. And all that was really standing between each of these factions was just an old man, now emperor, Nerva. So you can see that many people in the different political factions really didn't want peace, and there was more than one attempt to assassinate Nerva. But in each instance, Nerva continued to play the role of the merciful monarch, and he didn't prosecute even the people that conspired against him. We don't know a lot about Nerva's reign because it was so short. We have several coins from Nerva, and these coins emphasize that there was a desire for a fresh beginning, a new start in Imperial Rome under Nerva. Despite the Senate's hatred of Domitian, Nerva had to take a little bit of the edge off his propaganda. He couldn't just overtly glory in the death of his predecessor, so he minted a coin proclaiming public liberty. This was, of course, a thinly veiled way of saying that Domitian was a tyrant without having to say it, but that was about as overt as the messaging got. Much of Nerva's agenda was focused on restoring the role of the emperor as a provider and a defender of all classes of Romans, and even in some sense, just the broader inhabitants of the Roman world. So what kinds of things did Nerva do to accomplish this restoration of Roman dignity? Well, he cut taxes. Everybody loves that. Italians were having to fork over money to pay for the transportation of government officials and sending official dispatches by messenger. I can't imagine that the tax was particularly heavy, but by cutting it, Nero was symbolically showing that he wanted to restore good government. Domitian, after all, spent a lot of money, so this was kind of a nod to fiscal responsibility. But there are two far more famous acts of beneficence that Nerva would become known for. The first was his Alimentia program, which was a subsidized loan and redistribution scheme that some would call one of history's oldest welfare programs. Here's how the scheme worked. The emperor would offer land to poor Roman citizens through a loan program, and the repayments on the loan would be capped at 5% interest, and then the new landholders would pay back their loan, but the interest money wouldn't go to Nerva. It would instead be stocked in a fund that was then redistributed to orphaned children in Rome. We don't know the details of which children received the money. We don't know how many children received the money. We don't know the state of the fund. We just know through inscriptions, which don't offer a lot of detail or context, that the program existed and that it was started under Nerva, and then it would be expanded under his successor. The other of Nerva's famous reforms actually doesn't deal with Roman citizens at all. It dealt with the Jewish people. As you might remember from episode 24 on this podcast, that was on the Holy Land, the founder of the previous Roman imperial dynasty, that was Vespasian, did not care much for Jewish people. He and then his son Titus murdered hundreds of thousands of Jews and subsequently sacked Jerusalem and destroyed the Jewish temple in AD 70. And then to add insult to injury, Vespasian taxed the Jews to pay for a new temple to a Roman god. That was Jupiter Optimus Maximus, Jupiter best and greatest. but that temple was back in Rome. So insult to injury. But what I didn't mention in that episode was how Roman officials collected the taxes on Jews. As you might imagine, Romans were especially good at degrading and humiliating their conquered enemies. And for Vespasian and Titus and Domitian, who had kind of made their dynasty by conquering the Jews, they were happy to make an example of those people. So when Jewish men showed up to pay this special tax, they couldn't simply mail their taxes in. After all, they actually had to pay their taxes in person. The Romans decided to verify each man's Jewish identity. Well, how do you do that? Well, as you might guess, all Jewish men have one physical difference compared to Gentile men. That's right. Sometimes, and in public, the Romans forced Jewish men to expose themselves to allow Romans to check whether they were circumcised and therefore practicing Jews. Now, this was obviously unnecessary. It was meant to utterly dehumanize and degrade Jewish people. But Nerva, in an act that was not so much motivated by sympathy for the Jews, but rather to recover Roman dignity, banned this dehumanizing tax collection practice. And instead, Nerva even provided an exemption to the tax for non-practicing Jews. It was almost as though he wanted to separate Jewish people from their own religion through economic incentives. But despite efforts like these, whether it was cutting taxes or providing welfare payments for children or even just restoring the dignity of Roman provincials, none of these efforts were really capable of restoring faith in the imperial state and reunifying what was a fractured and divided political scene back in Rome. And so the harsh realities of what we have seen over and over again during the Pax Romana reasserted themselves, and with quite a bit of drama. It began in AD 97. This is just a year after the aged Nero assumed office. What happened? He was kidnapped and held hostage in his own palace by the prefect of his own Praetorian Guard. And as you know from previous episodes, the Praetorians had used their military authority several times in the past to name emperors to office. And they had the most to lose, by the way, if the Senate really did manage to reassert control over the nomination of emperors. But also, many of the Praetorians, including the prefect, had got along pretty well with Domitian, and they wanted his killers brought to justice. But also, a third thing, because Nerva was so old and at the same time had not designated a successor, the Praetorians had an interest in making sure Nerva nominated someone friendly to their cause when he considered who was next going to sit on the imperial throne. In the end, Nerva had little choice. He could either stand on principle, in which case he'd be executed, and then the Praetorian Guard would just do what they wanted anyway, or he could agree to their demands and live another day. And he chose the latter. Nerva was then released from the palace, and now that he was free, he made a public speech condemning the murder of Domitian. The era of neutrality was broken, and Domitian's assassins were rounded up and executed. And finally, in addition to that, Nerva informed the world that he had named a successor, the 44-year-old governor of Germania, a man named Trajan. Both Trajan and his father had been loyal to Domitian, so this was a pro-Domitian choice. And Nerva really wasted no time transferring the trappings of state to his new heir. Trajan was given the name Caesar, for example. This is a designation that increasingly signified who the sitting emperor's successor was going to be. Trajan was also made consul, which gave him official executive power, just in case an accident or old age intervened to take Nerva to the realm of the gods. But Trajan decided not to return to Rome despite being named Nerva's successor. Instead, wisely, He toured several of Rome's most militarized provinces, visiting with soldiers, no doubt making deals to ensure that their loyalty was with him whenever he took official power and became sole emperor. Well, unsurprisingly, yeah, Nerva died almost right after this in AD 98. Our sources say that while the emperor was attending a private party, Nerva had a stroke and died. Conveniently, and with Trajan ready to take over, really the timing could not have been better. And so Trajan assumed office, and he had with him the loyalty of the soldiers, the Praetorian Guard backing him all the way, and the initially quite tacit support of the Senate. But as we'll discuss in the next few episodes, Trajan would use his momentum to successfully unify Rome and even expand Roman boundaries to their greatest extent in history. Trajan's legacy would come to rival even that of Rome's first and arguably greatest emperor, Augustus. And Trajan would be rewarded with a title that no other emperor would ever lay claim to: Trajan Optimus Princeps, or in English, Trajan, Rome's greatest emperor.
Thanks for listening to the Pax Romana podcast. For more information, including a list of primary sources and further reading, check the show notes. Music by Red Productions and Exocor. Follow Dr. Colin Elliott on X at ProfCPE or email colin@paxromanapodcast.com. Listen to more episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or just about anywhere podcasts are available. Stay tuned for the next episode of the Pax Romana podcast.